wonderful, for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesty above the curtain.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing it once again the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. The views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us from Raleigh, North Carolina, our good friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who has taught at the university level, who has worked in the Department of Education during the Reagan administration, and in my estimation is the best researcher we have to help us understand what's really going on. He's written extensively on so many subjects and is now in the process of a series of articles on this mental health screening that the administration wants to do under the New Freedom Initiative. The New Freedom Initiative, doesn't that sound wonderful? Of course, going back to something Woodrow Wilson had written, a book he wrote back in 1912 called The New Freedom. And isn't it amazing how they can use these phrases over and over again to conceal what they're really up to? Dr. Dennis Cuddy, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I saw you had a new edition of the mental health screening. What is this, about 18?
Yeah, this is part 18. Right. Just came up yesterday.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about it? Because at each one, you learn more and more about this whole movement to use so-called science and mental health screening ready to control the American people and justify medicating our children and destroying the very soul of the people of this country.
I'll mention that briefly and then get to the dialectic topic for today.
All right, fine.
Okay, the mental health screening is one of the vehicles by which government and eventually a world government can seek to control people. And what happens in our particular case was during the Second World War, the Alger Hiss, who was later convicted for perjury regarding being a Soviet spy, broadened the definition for the World Health Organization's constitution so that health no longer was simply something like the absence of a physical infirmity, but it was very broad, include mental health and even your social well-being, which of course is a vehicle for interpreting however you want that somebody has a mental health problem or a problem of a social nature that the government has to intervene and remedy. And so what happened was he got his friend Brock Chisholm, a Canadian psychiatrist, to be the first head of the World Health Organization. And Chisholm, in the February 1946 issue of Psychiatry Journal by that title, said it's these concepts of right and wrong that have been fed to youngsters by their parents and priests and ministers and others. That's the problem, because this burdens them with feelings of guilt, which are bad, hurts their self-esteem, and so we have to change all this. And one of the vehicles they would use to do that are the schools, as well as social service workers, and it proceeded from there, and we can take it up after the break.
And, of course, what people have to understand is what's going on is part of a long-range plan. And, of course, what they really want to do is destroy our belief in God and in family and in country. And that's really what they're doing with our children. They're targeting them because they realize if they can control the outlook, the reality of one generation of our children, why they can control our nation. And look at our young people. Look at how many of them with their tattoos and their pierced ears and pierced tongues and pierced umbilicus, and how almost like a whole generation has been lost. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who has taught at the university level, who was with the Department of Education during the Reagan administration, but he is certainly the leading, in my estimation, the leading researcher we have, trying to connect the dots on really what's going on behind the scenes. And if you've ever wondered really what's happening, why things are unfolding the way they are, you need to understand that nothing is happening by accident. It is all part of a diabolical plan by wicked people who have a different worldview. And, of course, they disrespect the idea of individual freedom under God. They hate the God of the Bible, and they are working to create a new world order, a new world religion, and a new world financial system. And with that, Dr. Cuddy, why don't you pick up the story? Do you want to get into the continue with the discussion on the mental health screening, or do you want to get into the dialectics?
Well, I'll blend them together.
All right, fine.
We had been at the period before the break regarding World War II, just prior to that, to show the influence of various foundations. In 1933, I believe it was April 11th, Max Mason, who was head of the Rockefeller Foundation, and that foundation had been very instrumental for many, many years. It was John D. Rockefeller who had introduced Margaret Sanger to the big moneyed people so that she could start Planned Parenthood. And Planned Parenthood originally was called the Birth Control League, and it wasn't just about strictly birth control, it was about eugenics. And that flowed out of a whole long movement that we'll get into perhaps a little bit later. But many influential people, this wasn't just some isolated group. You had the first, International Congress on Eugenics in 1912, and you had the president of Harvard there, Charles Eliot. You had people like Winston Churchill involved, and many, many other high-level individuals who were involved in this concept of eugenics.
But wasn't it really they wanted to create and breed a super race? They wanted to do away with the less desirable people. They, as an elite, knew what was best for the world.
Absolutely, and it wasn't, you know, that they got their ideas from Hitler. It was the other way around. Hitler got his from them. Ernst Rudin, who was one of his leading individuals on this eugenics movement, actually got a lot of his information from the Birth Control League and Margaret Sanger, and actually had an article published in one of her journals. And so, anyway, the long story short, the Rockefeller Foundation was instrumental in this, and then after the Second World War, at the time that we're talking about originally with Alger Hiss and Brock Chisholm, the medical director of the Rockefeller Foundation, Alan Gregg, wanted to see if they could find an organization that would put wartime psychology into the civilian population.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and he was just talking about this whole idea of eugenics really originated with the great tax-exempt foundations, and they were the ones who financed Margaret Sanger, and it wasn't that the Nazis got their ideas on ideas on eugenics from the Nazis. The Nazis got them from right here in the United States. And what people do not understand is that there were a number of eugenic organizations and eugenic meetings in the first couple of decades of the 20th century, and there is an elite who really believe that they know what's best. They are going to breed a super race, and they're going to eliminate the less important people. And so with that as the background, Dr. Cuddy, why don't you pick up the story?
Yes, there were any number of people, any number of groups. The Fabian Socialist, one of their early members was H.G. Wells, wrote a book in 1901 called Anticipations, where he said they would have a cause worth killing for. And other Fabians joined into this movement. George Bernard Shaw, 1928, talking about you would be fed and clothed and so forth, whether you liked it or not. And then when you're no longer of any use, you might be killed or executed in a kindly manner. And it wasn't just the killing. It was sterilization as well, forced sterilization. Harold Lasky was another leading Fabian socialist in England. And one of his friends was Oliver Wendell Holmes, who in 1928 had written the Supreme Court decision Buck versus Bell, which was a forcible sterilization decision coming out of Virginia, that it was okay to forcibly sterilize these certain unfit, low-intelligence individuals. And Holmes wrote to Lasky about this, describing his decision that he'd written, and Lasky wrote back saying, oh, this is wonderful, and I think you ought to sterilize all of the unfit, among whom I'm including all fundamentalists.
So that would be people of fundamentalist religions. Right. For our listeners, if you'd like to get the page that Dr. Cuddy quoted from George Bernard Shaw, we do have that page. Give us a call and ask for the George Bernard Shaw quotation. It comes from An Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism and Capitalism, and it was written in 1928 and 1929. There's no question that these people have a genocidal agenda, and George Bernard Shaw said, hey, it might be necessary to put you to death in a kindly manner, but while you were allowed to live, you would have to live well. And there were many people out there who had these ideas of the elite and simply killing off the unworthy. You'll see that very, very strongly in Bertrand Russell's writing in 1953. I'm sure you're going to get to that, the impact of science on society.
Right, he's another Fabian socialist, and I've got some letters between him and H.G. Wells earlier on. It wasn't just, you know, here's my philosophy. Russell had a school, and he wrote to Wells. He says, these are the people I'm training for this you know, modern society that we're developing. And Max Mason, as I indicated earlier, head of the Rockefeller Foundation, said their goal was social control, the control of human behavior. And then Alan Gregg wound up as medical director funding an organization called Tavistock in England. And the reason they chose them is because they had a psychiatric institute founded around 1920. And the deputy head of that was Dr. John Rawlings Reese. He had been involved in many things. He was the one who was interrogating Rudolf Hess and some of the Germans. But anyway, in 1940, a journal called Mental Health, Reese had written that the psychiatrist who had the correct view of how people should act should be in charge of everything, and people wouldn't go along with it, but he said, that's okay, we'll infiltrate. And he said, we already have infiltrated the church and the education, and so, you know, we're making great progress here in undermining these things. And then, as I indicated, Brock Chisholm, with that same sort of attitude, was made the first head of the World Health Organization. And another friend of theirs, another leading Fabian socialist, Sir Julian Huxley, became the first head of UNESCO. And in 1948, he was writing about their purpose and their philosophy. And he said, you know, we need a world government, and we need to get people to think about eugenics. And it was right after the Second World War, so he knew what people's attitudes were about Hitler. But he said, that's all right. We need to get people to think about the unthinkable. In other words, they hadn't missed a beat. They were going to continue along the same path, this eugenic attitude that there was this elite who should control the rest of us. And one of the senior associates of Tavistock was named Fred Emery, and he developed a theory, as he called it, the theory of social turbulence. And what you need to understand is that they realized the public wasn't just going to bow down to their will, saying, oh yes, you people are wonderful and now we'll be your slaves. So they had to create situations in which the public would be willing to accept the benevolent rule of these wonderful elite people who knew what's best for the rest of us. And so this particular theory said that if you throw a bunch of crises at people, emotional, psychological, economic, whatever, they will go into psychological retreat and therefore be more susceptible to your guiding hand or whatever term they wanted to use. And so what you find is that mental health, along with other fields, education and other areas, was used by these people to create these situations from which the public would want, as an early Fabian who later converted and was exposing them, George Orwell, said in his book 1984, he said, you know, they will come to love Big Brother, was the plot. And so what you have is through, at least as far as my series on mental health, education, social control, again, speeding up to the future, you had a few years ago, 2002, a new Freedom Commission on Mental Health established by the current President Bush. And what it is designed to do, and he has recommended all of his executive agencies within the federal government to pursue the recommendations of the new Freedom Commission, is that all people, it's especially children at first, because they understand that values are shaped at that early age, should have this mental health screening. Now, your immediate response to your listeners might be, well, you know, they're just concerned that these youngsters might have psychosis, some horrible mental illness, and therefore, you know, we need to help them. But what you have to understand is the way they interpret these things, at about the same time that was going on, the federal government, through the National Science Foundation, The National Institute of Mental Health was putting up a $1.2 million study to look at the issue of what you constitute a mental health problem. And what you find out is the so-called experts from Johns Hopkins and other places found that under this broad definition that I mentioned before, you know, not just, you know, do you have psychosis, but that your social well-being is involved, that people with dogmatic beliefs are possible individuals or candidates for mental health treatment because they're narrow-mindedness and so on.
They're sort of like the fundamentalists. I mean, the fundamentalists, those Islamic fundamentalists, are really a terrible threat to the world, and Christian fundamentalists are too, because they're so fixed in their ideas and they just won't shift, and they believe they're right. They believe in their religion is the only true religion. Why we can't have that in a tolerant world where there are no absolutes.
Absolutely. Intolerance is the one of the primary evils, according to these individuals.
We've got to be willing to tolerate everything except, of course, the Christians who have their intolerant ideas.
That's right. And in addition, we can't have people with the attitude that there may be something wrong with what you and I have just said. In other words, that there's this new world order that's coming about. And so what they'll do is say, through their friends in the press and media, say, well, you know, those people who believe in these conspiracies about a new world order and a world government, never mind that H.G. Wells back in the 1930s wrote that this is what their plan was, those people are, quote, paranoid. And, of course, paranoia is a mental health problem, and you must be treated for your mental health problem. And it, like I said, it's other fields, education, what you go through is what they call remediation through outcome-based education. You know, you don't have the right attitude, and so you must be remediated until you get the right attitude. And that comes through another Tavistock entity back in the late 40s. They joined up with a research group, Research Dynamics in Michigan, where Kurt Lewin, another one of these, there are two basic schools, the Frankfurt School and the Leipzig School, came about and got into education. And what they did was form what was called the National Training Laboratories, jointly with the NEA, the National Education Association, set that up. And that outfit, the National Training Labs, in the early 60s, came up with a little booklet that I have quoted from called Issues in Human Relations Training, where they talk about their sensitivity training. You know, you have to be sensitive, not intolerant. And they literally say in there that sensitivity training is a form of thought reform or coercion or brainwashing. They use that term, brainwashing. And so they know exactly what they're doing. And so the point is, all of this is brought about through a dialectical process, as I said, whether it's the Tavistock method, theory of social turbulence, whatever it is. And so to give some examples of how this works, you would say, let's go back to around the time of the French Revolution. And I pick up on a lot of this stuff in the book that you carried that I did called The Road to Socialism and the New World Order. And to use an example, what they do is there's this elite, all right, and they look at the people, and what they do is say they foment this sort of revolutionary attitude. Now, you people, do you understand that you're slovenly here, and you know you're oppressed? And look at those kings over there, and those leaders of the church, and how well they live. And that's not right. You know what you need is to overthrow this, the shackles that are placed upon you. And so, you know, they foment the French Revolution, all at the time knowing that in the end, it isn't going to be the people who are liberated in any responsible sense. But what they do is say, you know, you ought to be like a king. You know, you ought to do your own thing. Why should people tell you what to do? And so liberté, égalité, fraternity really comes to mean license. And egality doesn't mean everybody's equal. It means the leveling of these masses under these new philosopher kings who have replaced the church leaders and the monarchs.
And I think it's so important to recognize that after the French Revolution, people really weren't any better off. They just replaced one emperor with another emperor. But that's how it really works. It really has to do with power. And so if you look at communism, communism has nothing to do with redistributing the wealth of the wealthy. It has to do with impoverishing the middle class and establishing a new ruling class. So we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Ketty, right here at Radio Liberty.
most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we had. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four tapes of The Secret Government to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And I simply want to point out, if you go back to the time of the Vietnam War, it was during that war that we lost so much freedom here in America. It was during that time that they took God and prayer out of our schools. It was during that time that they changed the immigration laws, which were aimed at actually changing us into a multicultural, multilingual society. It was during that period of time that they began to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. It was during that era that they found a woman had a right to kill the child that she was in her womb. It was perfectly all right to kill it. It was a matter of choice. And, of course, it was really because The Vietnam War was a diversion. We were financing the North Vietnamese all that time. Massive aid to the Russians. We're giving massive aid to the North Vietnamese. And you'll be pleased to know that we eventually wrote off most of those loans from the Russians. After all, they couldn't possibly have afforded to keep the war going without constant infusions of help from America, any more than the insurgents in Iraq today would be able to continue doing what they're doing without infusions from Saudi Arabia and from Pakistan and from Iran and Syria. And why don't we try to cut off the funds to the insurgents? Why we cut off the funds? We wouldn't have a war. So you have to understand that the Iraq war is a great diversion. And as these new ideas of controlling the minds and souls of our children are being introduced here, the American people are oblivious to what's really happening. And this is really very concerning. You have to understand that just because we have a Christian administration in Washington, D.C., the people who want to control the minds and the souls of our children have an entirely different administration. So pick up the story there, Dr. Cuddy.
Okay. We were at the starting around the time of the French Revolution. And remember, all of the elements of the process are there, the sort of Hegelian dialectic.
Could you explain what the dialectic is for our listeners who don't really understand it?
Well, there's actually two parts to it. You have a thesis, then you have an antithesis, which is the opposite, and then you have a synthesis, which is in the middle. In terms of political or economic or whatever, it can be an action and then a reaction of the public, resulting in the final solution, which in this case the power elite wanted all along.
And in fact, it's really a matter of stimulating conflict so that you can change society.
Right. And so during the French Revolution, remember, you have all of the elements. You have the eugenic element there. Marquis de Sade, for example, from which the term sadist comes, wrote a book called Philosophy dans le Boudoir, The Philosophy in the Bedroom, is the translation, in which he said, well, we can use abortion as a form of eugenics, as a form of birth control, you know, to get rid of certain unwanted types. And at the same time, it wasn't just the French Revolution. In England, same sort of thing was going on, the same mentality. Jeremy Bentham had what he called the utilitarian framework for thinking at the same time. And so you had two, as they would come to be called, socialist elements. Actually, one of the revolutionaries, Saint-Simon, as he was called in France, had a secretary called Auguste Comte, C-O-M-T-E, who developed that term in the so-called science of sociology that flowed from it, the social sciences. And basically what that was Comte developed a system of what he called positive polity, where you would do away with, as the French Revolution wanted to, and as Jean-Jacques Rousseau, one of the architects of the revolution, and his work called The Social Contract said, do away with these authoritarian types. You know, the church is the authority, the king or queen is the authority, and so that man would be, would rise in effect to his own God and determine what's right and wrong for himself. And so, what you had, was a period in which these two efforts were joined. For example, from the French Revolutionary period, you had the Marquis de Lafayette, and he brought over to this country Fanny Wright was her sort of nickname here. In France, she was known as Francoise d'Arusmont. And she, they worked together with the British side of this, Robert Owen, and then his son Robert Dale Owen, in setting up what was called New Harmony in the late 1920s in Indiana, which was the first commune in the U.S.
That was actually the early 1980s, wasn't it?
In the late 1920s is when they set up New Harmony.
In 1920s?
In the late 1820s.
Go ahead.
In the late 1820s in New Harmony, Indiana, the first commune, and they were joined by an American named Orestes Brownson, who later on wrote about a 20-volume set of books, in which he described and revealed what they had been up to. And it wasn't just, you know, some little commune somewhere. They were developing political parties in New York called the Working Men's Party, which was sort of the Karl Marx would later come to. And so this was a whole plan that we can take up after the break.
We'll be right back here in just a moment. Of course, Orestes Brownson described a secret society aimed at taking over America.
Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, that is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIB-WAR right now.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Dr. Cuddy is talking about a technique that has been around since the beginning of time, how the elite will, of course, pit two forces one against another. Maybe it will be two nations, maybe it will be two philosophies, maybe it will be a revolutionary movement, as was at the time of the French Revolution. But this was all planned ahead of time by people who had a different worldview. They wanted to change the world, and they knew exactly what they're doing. And, of course, we see these same ideas carried forward to what's going on in the Middle East today, what's going on here in America, as we pit the Republicans against the Democrats, the right against the left, the conservative against the liberal, and yet nothing really changes. So pick up the story there, Dr. Cuddy.
Sure. The two leading forces in the 1800s, England and France, the element of the elite had joined together, as I indicated, bringing this revolutionary spirit over here with, on the one hand, Marquis de Lafayette's friend, Francois d'Arismont, Fanny Wright, joining up with the Owens, Robert Owen, his son, Robert Dale Owen, and then this American, Orestes Brownson. And as I indicated, he was spelling out what their plot was and how they would use the schools and develop a national school system and get God out of the schools and so forth.
This is about 1820, that period,
right
in there.
1828, New Harmony, Indiana. And then through the 30s, and then later is when Orestes Brownson converted to Christianity and spilled the beans, as it was, on what they were up to. But the philosophy moved forward. It was picked up by Karl Marx and others typically, but is not going too far afield. In this country, the Civil War, Ulysses been told probably, you know, the reasons they're supposed to think that the Civil War was for, but it really wasn't. Again, it was the dialectical process. You had this battle between the ideals of the American Revolution and the French Revolution, And what they apparently wanted to do was destroy America, so you had to split the nation. And one way to do that is you have to get some issue, whether it's slavery or the extension of slavery into the territories, and sort of foment this revolutionary spirit. You create this problem, and you foment basically a war. And the way you have to look at it is only about, 7% of the South, actually, the Southerners, the planter class, had slaves. The rest of them, 93%, didn't have any slaves at all. They had no stake in, the issue of slavery per se as owners. And so the issue was framed in sort of a, the traditional anti-federalist versus federalist states' rights and so forth. And so anyway, the war is a foment in this country. But what it really is part of a conspiracy. Now, in case you think this, you have some doubt to that, there's a quote from the London Times that's back in 1863 that I picked up and I put in one of my News with Views articles that's on the Internet. And basically what it is there's this historian named Motley, and he's quoted in this book from 1863. He's writing to the London Times, and he's saying he's found this conspiracy, and what it is in the U.S. is to create this Gulf Empire. What they wanted to do is have an empire involving the lower southern states, the 11 basic southern states, as well as Mexico, the nations of Central America, as well as the Caribbean nations, and their terms were they wanted unlimited Negroes producing unlimited cheap products. And basically, that's what's happening today, except you would substitute the term Hispanics through various agreements like CAFTA that was just passed, or NAFTA before that, and so on. Okay, now, why would they do this? Why would this elite do this? Well, Lincoln wrote about just 5 months before his death a letter to William Elkin, which I put the quote from the letter in my books, the book The Globalist, that he was more fearful of these people, this power elite, than he was at any time for the nation's future during the war itself. He didn't really fear that he would lose the war, but he feared that this power elite was gaining control. These are the same types who had tried to gouge a certain high interest, about 33% interest rate, and he said, to heck with you, I'm going to produce these greenbacks, and basically came up with our own money system. They didn't like that, the powerful people of the world, because they had this elite plan, which flows back among several sources, but in this case, what you have is one of the people involved at the time was John Ruskin, who would believe that we, the British, the Anglos, were the best northern blood in the world. And, of course, his student, one of his leading students in Oxford University, was Cecil Rhodes, who followed up on this, and as we've talked many times in the past, developed the Secret Society of the Elect to carry out, basically, Ruskin's plan to, as Rhodes said, in Rhodes' own words, quote, to take the government of the whole world. But you have to use this dialectical process. And so in the U.S., the skull and bones part of this effort was developed by the Whitneys, very big money people, William Whitney, skull and bones, whereby what they would do with their money is contribute heavily to both political parties and then alternate power so that the public thought it had a choice when it really didn't. And various people, high level in the U.S., knew about this. Woodrow Wilson spoke about it at Carnegie Hall during his election campaign in 1912, and later it was reprinted in the New Freedoms book in 1913, where he talked about a power somewhere so complete, so pervasive, so interlocked, so watchful, you better not speak above your breath when you speak in condemnation of it. Basically, FDR said the same thing. FDR was put in place way back as like an assistant secretary of the Navy by Colonel House. House is the one who actually got him in that position, and House was Wilson's chief advisor, and so when FDR gets into the White House, he writes a letter to House saying, as you, House, and I know, the real truth of the matter is that a financial element in our larger centers has owned, O-W-N-E-D, our government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. And so what you do is the dialectical process continues to go on. You have to get America into a war. And so Churchill, for example, has a study commissioned over in England. What would the American public's reaction be if there were a lot of American civilians on a ship which got sunk by the Germans? And lo and behold, soon thereafter you have Lusitania, even though it was packed with munitions in its hull, and that's what caused it to blow up and why the Germans were after it. And the Germans had tried to warn the American people in advance with a newspaper ad. Just like the Maine, you know, Randolph Hearst says, you know, give me some photographs and so on, and I'll give you war. And so the Maine explodes and is blamed on the Spanish, and so voila. Now in that year, 1898, you had the Spanish-American War. Same thing with FDR, a tried and true method. He's talking to Henry Stimson, Secretary of War. Henry Stimson's the member of Skull and Bones, same fellow who would initiate George H.W. Bush in 1948 into Skull and Bones, same Yale Secret Society, and Stimson writes in his diary 2 weeks before Pearl Harbor, he says, I've just come out of a meeting with FDR and the rest of these people at the high level, and they're seeing how they can maneuver Japan into firing the first shot, so you get this reaction. You first of all, you embargo, cut off Japanese oil. They, you know, can't survive without oil and other raw materials, and so you know they're going to have a reaction to that. Right? Okay, so you create this reaction, and it eventually results in Pearl Harbor, which they know is coming, and they count on the American public's reaction to this day of infamy, as FDR says, and that gets us into a war, Second World War, which before then the American public was not in favor of.
Yeah. But they didn't want the First World War, they were manipulated into it. They didn't want the Second World War, they were manipulated into it. They didn't want the Vietnam War, and they were manipulated into that. They were manipulated into Korea. And now we are in the middle of a war that will go on for decades in the Middle East, and I believe is going to culminate in World War III. And we were manipulated into it. And you may justify our attack on Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden, but we didn't try to get Osama bin Laden. The trouble is, the war with Iraq was planned long before the 9/11 attack. And anybody who doubts that has only to read Paul O'Neill's book, The Price of Loyalty. He was the Secretary of Treasury, attending meetings in January and February of 2001 with Donald Rumsfeld and the President and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz. And what were they talking about 6 to 7 months before the 9/11 attack? How we're going to go to war with Iraq. How are we going to get the American people to go along with a preemptive war with Iraq? So it was all planned ahead of time, but the American people mustn't be told that. That's in the book, The Price of Loyalty by Paul O'Neill. Isn't it America? Isn't it amazing? Nobody ever quotes that.
That's right. And again, it's the dialectical process, which I said really has two definitions. You have a thesis, antithesis, and then a synthesis, or you have an action, a reaction, and then the reaction is used by the paralegal to get their ultimate goal, that third angle to the thing. And it's not only foreign affairs, it's domestic. After the Second World War, we got into that domestically. During the 50s, you had busing. It was a big issue. You had the Brown versus Board of Education, a case where what you had there is a reaction from a court case had integration as its goal. Actually, really, it wasn't. It was desegregation. And there's a way to do that and a way not to do that. You legally must desegregate. You know, we can't be a racist society. But the point is that the issue was used to create this division from which you would have an ultimate result. So that, for example, what you had was the problem, right? This would be racial discrimination, segregation. They come out of this with a Brown versus Board of Education decision saying, well, see those white, racist, reactionary, redneck Southerners. But what they do is they don't solve the problem. They're simply replaced by the liberal white elitist who is still bossing and, you know, like a slave master, telling minorities what to do anyway. And the way I portrayed this years ago was it wasn't just the back of the bus for where blacks were directed to sit. It was that the power structure was telling blacks where to sit anyway. And in this case, it was simply the liberal white elite still telling blacks, well, we're going to parcel you out. Even though there are 5 seats at the front of the bus, you can't sit there either. We're going to put you in seat number 1, you in 7, you in seat 14, so forth like that. This sort of management of the populace. This attitude that there's this elite who needs to manage our affairs because we're too stupid to know what to do. And in foreign affairs, same sort of thing. You had Lincoln Bloomfield, a CFR member, writing a report for a Rhodes Scholar, Dean Rusk, in the early 60s, in which he said that if the communist threat were greatly abated, the West would lose whatever incentive it has for world government. So you have this dialectic again. You have the West Western and economic Western capitalism, the East, Soviet, Eastern communism, and the dialectic says, well, you need the synthesis, which would be a world socialist government. But that's why they needed to fund and maintain this communist threat, so that the West wouldn't be simply satisfied with our system, but we would want to go into this world government. And like you said, we're manipulated through the Tonkin Gulf affair or resolution into the Vietnam War. And why was that necessary? Well, to get a world government, you have to reduce patriotism, patriotic nationalism. So in the 1970s, there was a poll taken of young people in the 20s, and they found that only about 24% in the early 70s thought patriotism was an important value. They had been turned off of patriotic nationalism, pro-American values, by the Vietnam War, which was really essential. Same thing in this country. You had change agents, as they were called. Rules for Radicals was a book by Saul Alinsky. It became, in the words of the head of the Kansas NEA's affiliate, the Bible of the NEA. At the front of that book is an acknowledgement to Lucifer, one of the biggest revolutionaries of the day. And the federal government at this time was, what Alinsky says is you have to foment hostilities within communities, develop this sort of revolutionary, radical attitude. And then the federal government spent 20-some million dollars at that time in the early 70s to train 500 change agents in our institutions of higher learning to go out into society and literally become change agents. As the head of the NEA at the time, Catherine Barrett, wrote, she said in 1973, I have published her quote, where she says, by the year 2000, we want to get the basics, the academic basics, which are now, at that time, all of the school day, down to just one quarter of the school day, reading, writing, math, so the teacher can now become what they're really supposed to be, and that's a philosophical change agent.
And I think it's so important for our listeners to understand that the reason that our children, so many of them, have difficulty reading and writing and doing arithmetic is because it was planned that way. I mean, when our students graduate from high school, they are totally incapable of competing with high school students from other countries throughout the world. So what we're doing is stressing mediocrity. It didn't happen by accident. They knew exactly what they were doing. The change agents were here. This is why when our students go into college, most of them have to take remedial math. They have to take remedial English or bonehead English. Why? Because they've deprived them of an adequate education. And you think it's bad for the whites. It's even worse for the blacks. And then we wonder why they perform so poorly. All part of a massive plan with strong racist implications.
Right, and just like I mentioned about Rockefeller before, his General Education Board set up in the early 1900s, Frederick Gates was in charge of that and wrote an article, which I quote, saying, we don't want to create a lot of lawyers and doctors and people who are well-educated. We want the masses satisfied with where they are. And that followed through to the end of the 1900s with the School to Work Initiative, where what you'll find in schools all across the country is people saying, let's be realistic. Only about 25% of our people are going to graduate from college anyway, from those who started in the first grade. So what we need to do is have them early on train as good little workers for the global workforce and have their skills credentialed. And Tavistock, I mentioned earlier, either piloted a smart card in England and in the U.S., that would have all the youngsters' skill credentials on there and eventually their health records and everything. And so, again, what you have is a dialectical process. You've had school shootings, and what happens? Well, immediately the papers, newspaper editors, controlled by the elite, come out and say, well, that means gun control. We need more gun control. They use the public's emotional reaction to advertise the need for more gun control in Congress. Same thing internationally. They create a situation in Saudi Arabia where they say, well, we'll protect you, the Saudi royal family. What you will do is give us lower price oil, at least keep OPEC from going up too rapidly. And in the meantime, all the money we give to you, you will reinvest back in this country into banks and stocks and so forth, and we'll militarily protect you. But they know what's going to happen. Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote about this. He said, you know, we need this Caspian oil. We need all of this oil for the future. There may be an Islamic backlash to this. We will, quote, manipulate people, and we'll deal with it. There may be some terrorist attacks. We know it's coming, but that's okay.
I know that was from his book, The Grand Chessboard, written in 1997.
Right. And so what they knew was that there would be a terrorist attack. And so in both of my books, Secret Records Revealed, and in the Globalist book, I put there that there could be this terrorist attack, after which the public would be more willing to give up some of its freedoms. And lo and behold, the very afternoon of September 11, 2001, not the next day, the very afternoon, ABC Washington Post comes out with poll results saying two-thirds of the public would be willing to do exactly that, give up some of our freedoms in order to have peace and security and safety and so on. Brzezinski did the same thing when he was National Security Advisor for Jimmy Carter in the late 70s. He deliberately sent money and these training exercises into Afghanistan. Why? Because he anticipated the Soviet reaction would be to come in. They would get into a sort of quagmire there, and it had been planned all along. There's a 1952 map I've mentioned where in the end, when this new world government comes, American troops would be in Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and others, where we were in the 1990s in preparation for what's happening now.
And unfortunately, most people don't understand it's long-range plan. There really are elite people who make these plans, and behind them are the dark spiritual forces we talk of so often. Dr. Dennis Kennedy, thank you so very much for being with us. And when we get back, I'm going to tell our listeners how they can get your books.
Thank
right
you.
Here at Radio Liberty. Bye-bye. God bless.
You too. Bye.
We have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, but blacked out across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see loud, suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, what really happened.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and let me just comment, if you're interested in getting Dr. Cuddy's books, we carry his book, Secret Records Revealed, The Road to Socialism, his book on the timeline for the and teaching and education for the New World Order, Now is the Dawning, the book on the cover-up, his book on the 9/11 or September 11th, prior knowledge. We carry them all here at Radio Liberty because we think the books are very important. If you'd like to learn more about them, why, give us a call. We also have part one of his treatise on mental health screening. All available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Now, we talked earlier about the population control agenda. The fact that there is a master plan to limit the population of the rest of the world. And that was put out in 1974. It originally was a top secret classified document. They didn't want the people of the world to know that we intended to limit their population. Well, we actually, of course, it's now declassified. We offer that. That's NSSM, National Security Study Memorandum 200. If you'd like to get it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We provide it in a bound form. And then, of course, we have a video on population control. We have a four-tape set on population control. We have a new little pamphlet we put out. It's called Genetic Engineering, and actually it's four or five of our newsletters that will explain to you that there really are people out there who are working very hard on eugenics here in the United States and creating new diseases that are going to influence you and your family. Then, of course, we have a four-tape set on genocide. We have a four-tape set on the New Order of the Barbarians, which is four interviews with Dr. Dinigan, who had the opportunity of hearing a talk given by the head of Planned Parenthood, the medical director of Planned Parenthood, Dr. Richard Day, where they talk about the people, this elite that rule the world. And Dr. Day was part and parcel of this whole movement. And he gave this talk to a group of doctors, asking them not to take any notes, but he was going to tell them what the future held. And he talked about how they were going to create new diseases to kill off large parts of the population, how they were going to withhold treatments for cancer and do everything they could to facilitate its spread because there were too many people in the world and they were going to have to die of something. It is truly one of the most incredible four-tape sets we've ever put together. And there is a transcript of this. If you'd like to get the copies of the transcript and or the four-tape set, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And ask for either the transcript or the four-tape set, or preferably get them all, The New Order of the Barbarians. And ladies and gentlemen, there really are people out there who look at the world differently than you and I. If you doubt that, why, you really need, of course, to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, which will take you into the people who have no human compassion, who create wars simply to advance their agenda for the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Financial System. So remember, all of these things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or if you prefer, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us. And as I commented earlier, we have a unique opportunity to have our evening program expanded to a network with 18 stations. Some of these are major stations, 100,000-watt stations. But we could certainly use your help. And if you really believe our message is important, that people need to understand the true nature of what we're up against, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 or write to us at RadioLiberty.com. Please go to our website, www.RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty. We're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.